Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the new Speaker of the New York City Council releases her tax returns, which reveal little or no charitable contributions. We will ask, do you care when it comes to a crusader against inequality? And we'll ask how your own liberal or conservative politics inform your own charitable contributions. Also, 50 years ago, Isaac Asimov predicted what technology and other aspects of the future would be like in the year 2014. Today, we'll look at how much he got right. Tomorrow, we'll take your predictions for 50 years from now. But we begin with the question, how much of the Christie administration will now unravel as a result of Bridgegate? Here's a clip of Assemblyman John Wisniewski of Sayreville, the Deputy Speaker of the State Assembly, on CBS Face the Nation yesterday. Wisniewski is the Democrat leading the investigation in the legislature. Bob Schieffer, the Face the Nation host, asked him if he thinks it's really possible that Governor Christie did not know about the political nature of the traffic jam at the George Washington Bridge. And I want you to listen in this 60-second answer to just how many of Christie's aides get mentioned.
I don't think it's credible for a governor to have his chief of staff, his communication director, his deputy chief of staff, all involved, his chief counsel, all involved in email communications on the day this took place and the days after, talking not only about the problems that were created in Fort Lee, but also talking about how to spin it to the press. I don't think it's possible for all of those people to be involved and know, and for the governor to absolutely have no communication. Remember, this was in the midst of his reelection campaign. Any governor running for reelection is going to want to know about problems that come up, if for no other reason, to know how to respond when asked a question. So these people got an email from the executive director of the Port Authority saying that laws were broken. His chief counsel knew, his deputy chief of staff knew, his incoming chief of staff knew. It just strains credibility that they didn't look at those documents and say, we ought to let him know about it.
So that was John Wisniewski, the Deputy Assembly Speaker on Face the Nation yesterday. So the Christie question is one thing. Did he know? Could he possibly not have known? But with that list of people who did know, back with us now is New Jersey Public Radio Christie Administration correspondent Matt Katz. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Brian.
First of all, until a few days ago, if you had seen a list of guests for Face the Nation, former Defense Secretary Robert Gates, people like that were on the show this week. Who could have imagined special guest John Wisniewski, Assemblyman from Sayreville?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a former state party chairman, but he was not one of the big hitters in the Democratic Party by any stretch. He doesn't have any major bosses behind him, party bosses like the North and South Jersey legislators do. And here he is as essentially the most prominent Democrat in New Jersey going after a national political figure. It's remarkable.
And Fort Lee Mayor Mark Sokolich on another of the shows. That's the new world we're living in.
That's right.
But to the question of how much the Christie administration might unravel over this, and by the way, listeners, since I see half our lines are already full, yes, our phones are open on Bridgegate. Anything you want to say or ask this Monday morning, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or keep tweeting us as you've been doing all weekend. He has already fired or accepted the resignations of four appointees, including his deputy chief of staff and former campaign manager, Bridget Ann Kelly and Bill Stepien, plus Bill Baroni and David Wildstein from the Port Authority. But there are a few others near the top who questions are being raised about. That Wisniewski clip referred to the governor's chief of staff, for example, above Bridget Ann Kelly, who is his deputy chief of staff. Who's this chief of staff?
This is Kevin O'Dowd. He has just been named to be nominated by Christie a couple of weeks ago to be attorney general for the state. But that nomination hearing is now on hold. The current acting attorney general had been nominated to be a superior court judge. That's now on hold. I mean, this is day one after all this happened, the beginning of the first week after all this came out, and the ramifications are already tremendous. I mean, there's a shortage of judges in the state. This judge is not getting confirmed before the end of the legislative session this week, and Governor Christie's chief of staff, Kevin O'Dowd, is apparently not now being confirmed as he was expected to be for attorney general. The incoming chief of staff was a woman named Regina Agia, but she's in a bit of trouble too, at least according to these emails, in terms of speculation about what she knew, because she was the head of the authorities unit, which is in charge of overseeing the Port Authority, and she's mentioned in these emails that were released last week. The number of high-ranking Christie staffers mentioned in these emails is remarkable.
And I'm going to go over a few of them individually with you because I think it's so interesting, and again goes to the question how much of the Christie administration under him is going to unravel as a result of this. Was Kevin O'Dowd, as chief of staff, supervising Bridget Ann Kelly at the time she sent her email in August that said time for a traffic jam in Fort Lee?
Yes. He was supervising her, and he is one of the several people in the office who used to work at the U.S. Attorney's Office when Christie was U.S. Attorney. He brought over several people, and there's a number of people probably on your list there who are former assistant U.S. attorneys who were mentioned in these emails.
Interesting. And, of course, regarding O'Dowd's nomination to be state attorney general, a state attorney general is supposed to be somewhat above politics, but rather to represent justice in the state, just like the U.S. attorney general is supposed to represent justice, even though he's a presidential appointee. And that would include things like investigating state wrongdoing. And unlike in many states, the governor of New Jersey appoints the attorney general. In New York, for example, Eric Schneiderman is elected attorney general statewide. So that makes it already a more politicized position than elsewhere in the country. What do you think O'Dowd will have to testify about once they ever get to his confirmation hearings?
Well, they're going to ask him what he knew and when the governor knew. And that's like the key question that Democrats want answered. So they're going to use any opportunity they have to do that. There's also Charlie McKenna was chief counsel in the governor's office.
I was just going to ask you about him. Another name mentioned by Assemblyman Wisniewski in that Face the Nation clip, the governor's chief counsel, Charles McKenna.
Now, he's been with the governor also from his days as U.S. attorney. He's been nominated to be the head of the School Development Authority. We don't know where that stands. So many of these names listed in these emails are connected in so many various ways. Many of them had at least two previous positions, either with the Attorney General's office, the Port Authority, or the U.S. Attorney's Office. And it just shows a very sort of tight and a knit group of people who have been around the governor for many years and a sort of a revolving door between these agencies. I mean, Christie's first Attorney General, Paula Dow, then went to the Port Authority to be their head lawyer. The current head lawyer at the Port Authority, Christie's appointee, is a guy who was nominated to be the Supreme Court. That nomination failed, but he had worked with Christie at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and he had been at the Attorney General's Office. So there's a real revolving door here, and everybody's connected to everybody. And the only people, the four people who have gotten in trouble so far, the ones who have been forced to resign, were all political types. All of these folks are from a more of a legal background. And you would think if there's more documents to implicate any of them in the planning of this traffic jam, then it could be a real domino effect down the line.
A little more on Charles McKenna, the governor's chief counsel. His name was in at least one of the emails, which is why we're talking about him. When Bill Baroni, Christie appointee to the Port Authority, who later resigned, testified about the lane closures, he asked his colleague David Wildstein, who later resigned, if Trenton was pleased with his performance, and he was concerned. So Wildstein comforted Baroni that Bridget Ann Kelly and another Christie aide were very happy, as was Mr. Christie's chief counsel, Charles McKenna. Now, I'm getting this from the New York Times account, so you can confirm it if you want. But what does that all suggest that McKenna knew or McKenna was doing?
It suggests suggest that they knew that this was a problem for them after the fact. What none of the documents do is indicate that any of more people beyond the ones we already know about who have resigned were involved in planning this traffic jam. We just know that as recently as early as the week of the traffic jam, they were dealing with media requests about it and advising their counterparts at the Port Authority to not say anything and to keep it quiet. So we don't know about the planning. We do know they were involved in damage control afterwards.
And what about David Sampson, Christie's top appointee to the Port Authority? These two other lower appointees, Wildstein and Baroni, have resigned. But a Wildstein email in this chain says Sampson promised to help retaliate against the New York Port Authority officials for reopening the lanes back in September at the end of the incident. Another email shows Sampson played a role in discouraging press inquiries into the lane closings, not in finding out what was happening. Why does David Sampson still have his job?
That's a great question. I mean, that's a question a lot of people are asking. Christie said he spoke with Sampson. He said this at the press conference last week for 2 hours. The day he found out, he said he found out about this, and Sampson said he knew nothing about it. Now we see Sampson's name in emails the week of the traffic jam. We also see planning for a meeting with Christie the week before this traffic jam was ordered in August. So his name comes up a few times. He has not said anything about this publicly. And by the way, he's a former attorney general.
So the list goes on of people connected to the – when you say a former – you mean a former – he's a former what?
He's a former attorney general, actually underneath McGreevy. But uh-huh. It's another revolving door of interconnectedness. And it just also indicates that the highest law enforcement people in the state of New Jersey are involved in this in some way. We don't know if it's illegal. We don't know if it's unethical. We just know that it involves the most important public legal minds in the state.
One other. The governor's communications director, or maybe two other in the communications department. His
yeah.
communications director, also referred to by Assemblyman Wisniewski in that clip from Face the Nation, as the New York Times tells it, the documents indicate that Christie's appointees at the Port Authority had discussed the matter with Christie's communications director, Maria Camella, as early as October 2nd, after the second of two articles appeared in the Wall Street Journal. Camella didn't think much of the story, Mr. Baroni texted Mr. Wildstein, said nobody paying attention. So what does that tell us about communications director Maria Camella's involvement?
It means that she was involved in the communications of a agency that is somewhat what we thought was somewhat separated from the governor's office. I mean, this is a bi-state agency. They have their own six-person communications team, but it seems that messages were being relayed to the governor's communication staff, and she is a crucial part of the team. She's really a big mind in terms of developing the governor's communication strategy, and her deputy, the chief press secretary, is also mentioned in those emails in some pretty colorful ways, as I'm sure you saw.
Is that Michael Juniak?
That's right.
Give me an example.
Well, some of the things he said about reporters cannot be repeated on public radio, but he is seen cursing out a reporter from the Star-Ledger. He's also seen just kind of dismissing with a curse word the entire paper. And he's advising that there should be no comment. This is after the traffic jam happened when reporters were inquiring as to why.
And anyone else? I wonder who else, who I haven't mentioned.
I think that gets back to it. I think that's most of it. I should also mention that Juniak, the spokesman, was also Christie's spokesman at the U.S. Attorney's Office. So he's involved, too. I'm told that he's still fine in terms of his position. He's still currently the press secretary. We don't see any other resignations or firings on the horizon as of now, but Wisniewski says there'll be more subpoenas coming out today in terms of more people that he wants to come visit his committee in the State House.
Matt Katz, New Jersey Public Radio's Christie administration correspondent with us as we continue to follow the developments in Bridgegate. Matt, I'll tell you, a few people are calling up to question the connection with the mayor of Fort Lee. So let's take one of those folks right now, John in Bradley Beach. John, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Thanks, Brian. There's two smart guys on the phone, so I do want to explore this. It never seemed plausible from the beginning. Getting endorsements from the other party, that's like gravy. It's not the kind of thing that you do political retribution about. I'm sure you're familiar with the Rachel Maddow theory by now, that the real fight at this point in August was with the Senate Democrats, and Loretta Weinberg is the leader of the Senate Democrats. Her district includes Fort Lee, and let's be frank, most people going over that bridge don't live in Fort Lee. They probably live in the middle of Bergen County, which is Loretta Weinberg's district, and not to mention the fact that if the fight is with the Senate Democrats, his opponent for governor, Barbara Bono, is a Senate Democrat.
Right,
so
and of
let's
course
talk
this,
about this.
Theory was brought up by Rachel Maddow on her show on MSNBC the other night. Also, another MSNBC contributor, Matt Kornacki, was on over the weekend.
Steve Kornacki.
I'm sorry, Matt Katz, our guest. Matt, I don't know if you saw his take, which was slightly different. Maybe even want to describe that one and then comment on all these alternatives and what you think they add up to.
Sure. The mayor, according to these documents, had when he was frantically trying to figure out why this traffic jam was going on, he wondered what he in an email to the Port Authority. He wondered what the implications would be for a $1 billion development project that was going up in Fort Lee. And this project is right at the foot of these lanes. And one of the selling points that to go to the bridge that were closed. And one of the selling points for the developer was that this would be close to the GW Bridge for those who live in this complex and want to work in New York City. And Kornacki's theory is that maybe that they were trying to send a message in some way by blocking these lanes and flexing their muscles and seeking retribution for something. They were at the point where the development was basically set, but they were still awaiting financing. So there was a crucial moment there. And Kornacki's theory is it had something to do with it. I think that theory, and these are all just theories now, holds a little bit more water to me than Rachel Maddow's theory, which was it was about judicial nominations. And that's because the mayor says that Port Authority police were actually telling commuters stuck in traffic that it was the mayor's fault. You don't like the traffic, the lanes are closed, call the mayor. So that ties directly to the mayor. If somebody was trying to teach him a lesson or pay him back, he needs to be blamed for something. Whereas Weinberg's a couple of steps separated from this traffic. Most commuters would not think to call Senator Loretta Weinberg to complain about traffic in Fort Lee. She also wasn't the leading senator fighting Christie's judicial nomination. So the Kornacki theory seems a bit stronger, but again, these are just theories.
John, I'm just curious, since you're interested in these alternative theories, why would Christie have gone to the mayor of Fort Lee on Thursday to apologize and make a public show of that if these other people or projects were perhaps the target? Do you think is part of the theory here that he would have had reason to distract attention from the others by actually going to Mark Sokolich and apologizing to him? I mean, that's quite a length to go.
I think that's why it's so interesting, and it was so easy for the governor to deny knowledge because the whole time, the last week and a half or so, the media has been barking up the wrong tree, and Christie News knew this was not about retribution for this mayor and his not endorsing me, so I can plausibly go and apologize and be genuine. And I actually, I believe the governor. If he didn't know and it wasn't about the retribution on this mayor, I say he's right. It was about something else. Either one of these two things we're discussing, but that only adds to it. It helps the governor his plausibility in apologizing and denying knowledge and anything. But it really, it's beyond the. It's just beyond belief that nobody higher up on his staff had any knowledge. And I would add, I would like to see this Bridget Ann Kelly woman give back every cent of her salary since August 13th because, you're running a campaign. You have millions of dollars to run a campaign. That's why we separate campaign money from, government tax money that's running the government. I mean, people that are on the government salary, using our tax dollars and doing political things. Yeah, they got fired. That's nice. She and all those other Port Authority employees, they should have to give every penny back.
John, thank you for your call. And, of course, that's one of the things that Wisniewski also said on Face the Nation yesterday might be actual crimes here, and that is using public funds for political purposes. But, you know, Matt Katz, there's another thing that a lot of people would like to see Bridget Ann Kelly do, and that is testify. Because the terse nature of her email exchange with Wildstein back in August suggests that there had been previous discussion about such an idea. Remember, she wrote, "Time for a traffic jam in Fort Lee." He wrote, "Got it." How did he even know what she was referring to? So there's got to have been some prior set of exchanges, either just between the two of them or involving God knows who, in order for that little terse exchange to have taken place, it seems.
Sure. I mean, it's almost, reading these emails, it's almost like we're picking up a conversation in the middle. So we're not sure. I mean, who knows if, you know, David Wildstein, who released most of these more damning emails, said that, his lawyer told the committee last week that, you know, he'd be willing to testify because he just pleaded the fifth on everything if given immunity. So he seems to be dangling this offer out there to the feds and whomever else might be investigating, saying, "I have more to say." Maybe he's got more documents. Maybe he's got more information indicating where Kelly might have gotten her marching orders from.
Patty and Weehawken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Brian. I just want to say I love your show, and I think you're very informative, and you react to different things that are going on.
Thank you.
I just want to say, you talk about political retribution. How about political distribution in Union City? I know they got money from the Port Authority to repave streets, and that's a big supposedly Democratic city. And also Harrison is a big Democratic city, but they all came out and they supported Governor Christie. Now, I don't know. Take it from there.
Yeah, we'll take it from there. Now, New Jersey Public Radio's Sarah Gonzalez was looking into the relationship between Christie and other mayors. Matt, do you have anything on that?
Yeah, we found in talking to mayors from who endorsed Christie and those who didn't that those who did endorse him felt that they got some little reward or they got help from the state with certain projects. It could be called cynically described as a reward, otherwise just described as attention from their government in Trenton and other mayors. Sarah reported about mayor of Hoboken who said she lost out on Sandy Aid after announcing she wouldn't endorse Christie. The mayor of Jersey City says that when he said he wouldn't endorse Christie, he got he had meetings with six Christie commissioners canceled suddenly within an hour. The idea of retribution does fit with a theme that is alleged by Democrats that the administration had a sort of a punishment and reward system for those who supported the governor politically.
Rob in Morristown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I enjoy your show very much. I appreciate it. I just wanted to talk about the fact that, you know, these lane closures did not only affect people trying to cross the bridge, that this created a huge... Well, I don't want to put it in the worst terms, but the traffic jam extends out to Route 46, Route 4, Route 80, the Turnpike. You know, people just trying to get around in northern New Jersey who were not trying to cross that bridge were also affected. And if it's, you know, a traffic study we're talking about, well, let's just do one and see how this really affected everyone, because it's not just people trying to get across.
Rob, fair enough. Thank you very much. The Times has some additional stories of individuals. I think most of them have been focused on the kids who are stuck in school buses and that one 90-year-old woman who had a heart attack and died after the ambulance was a few minutes later than it would have otherwise have been. Her family said they didn't think that it made the difference between life and death. But the Times reports, for example, on Isla Kasofsky, a Fort Lee real estate agent and a councilwoman, who said a colleague could not get to New York to be with her husband while he underwent a stem cell transplant. And also a man unemployed for a year was 40 minutes late for his first day at a new job. So, of course, you could go back and, short of things that were actually fatal or physically injurious, you know, list all the damaging effects on, you know, on a lot of individuals. So looking forward, Matt, The political analyst Mark Halperin, co-author of the Game Change books about the 2008 and 2012 presidential campaigns, was on Meet the Press yesterday and made this intriguing prediction.
I think we're headed towards a New Jersey constitutional crisis. Very little precedent, maybe none, as best I can tell so far, of a committee in the legislature trying to subpoena a governor.
A committee trying to subpoena a governor. I guess that would either be to testify or to subpoena his own email chain, which I don't think has emerged here yet through any of this process. Are they headed toward that state constitutional crisis that Mark Halperin suggests?
That would be a tremendous hearing to see the governor down there getting questioned by these by these assembly members that he's looked down on for so many years. I don't know if we're at that point yet. I mean, the idea of impeachment was brought up this weekend, but I don't think we're close to all of that yet. But there could be legal changes. There could be a move to make the attorney general independent. We also, actually, this morning we obtained here at WNYC a letter from the ACLU writing to the attorney general and asking for new regulations because they're concerned about the use of personal email accounts and text messages to conduct government business. They're also concerned about how the Port Authority has no real transparency requirements. They're not subject to the New Jersey open records law. And all of these documents that indicate political malfeasance would not have been released under normal transparency rules in the state or practices. So they're looking for government officials to start using their government accounts when doing government business instead of trying to hide it with texts and personal emails, and for all of those documents to be released when requested. So I don't know if a constitutional crisis might be a couple of steps ahead of us, but you'll certainly see legislation come out of this to see if the laws can be strengthened.
Do you know if those laws that the ACLU recommends are the case in other states? Is New Jersey law particularly lax in those regards?
I mean, we're in a somewhat unique situation because we have a bi-state agency. So they've claimed exemption from both states' public records laws. I will say that reporters who come to work in New Jersey are usually disgusted by how difficult it is to get information out of the state government. And so it does appear to be weaker than other states. I mean, there were documents in there from Mike Druniak, the governor's spokesman, from his work account talking about the lane closures. And the Bergen Record had requested such documents, any emails regarding the lane closures, and the governor's office responded that they didn't have anything. And yet we now know because of the subpoena that there were emails about this. I asked the governor about it at his press conference last week. He said he knew nothing about it and they abide by their transparency requirements. But this is an endlessly frustrating thing for reporters.
Matt Katz covers the Christie administration for New Jersey Public Radio. Matt, thanks a lot.
You got it, Brian. Thanks.
Coming up next, Maggie Haberman, who has a list of 10 unanswered questions about Bridgegate for Politico, and we'll talk to her about the national implications. Pretty interesting to hear Rudy Giuliani and Rick Santorum on some of the Sunday talk shows yesterday. We'll play those clips and talk about implications for the presidential campaign of Chris Christie. Stay with us.